China 21 is produced by the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy. We are a university-based think tank that produces original research to anchor major policy discussions on China and its relationship to the United States. This podcast features expert voices, insights, and stories about China's economy, politics, society, and the implications for international affairs. Learn more at china.ucsd.edu. Welcome to China 21, the podcast for the 21st Century China Center. I'm Samuel Choi. Hosting with me today is Jack Zhang, a PhD candidate here at UC San Diego, and also writes for the China Focus blog. Hello, Jack.
Thanks for having me, Sam, and happy birthday.
Thank you. Jack invited our guest today, Jesse Appel, on campus for a great show last night. Thanks for coming, Jesse.
Thank you so much for the invite.
Jesse is a comedian straight out of Beijing by way of my hometown, Boston.
Yeah.
Go Pats.
Yeah, go Pats.
Yeah, wish we were there today for the parade.
The viewership just plummeted nationally. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry, I know.
Go Pats.
They hate us, anyway. Yeah. His work has been featured in major outlets in the U.S. and China, and most recently founded the U.S.-China Comedy Center. I don't know about you guys, but reading the news lately has been very depressing and disturbing sometimes. And when it comes to U.S.-China relations, we're at a point where there's so many things that could derail the relationship and threaten the global system. So we all need some comic relief.
Yep.
And not just to unwind and relax, but also to unpack some of the thorny issues that's driving the relationship. And what Jesse does so well, and what he did last night in the show, is to bridge those cultural gaps by drawing out some of the nuances of personal stories from both societies, histories behind our cultures, and also drawing some commonalities, even in the way that comedy and humor is presented in both societies. So I love the clip that you showed, Jesse, last night with China and America being roommates.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a wonderful metaphor, wonderful imagery.
Yeah. That's how I look at it. The idea for that sketch was I thought it'd be funny if China and America were roommates. You'd have all these like little issues that kind of blow up and become bigger issues. But it also is, you know, a really apt way, I think, of looking at the world. It's like you don't necessarily choose or like need to love your roommate, although wouldn't your life be better if you did?
Yeah.
You know, you need to figure out a way to live with each other one way or the other. So you know, some issues are small, some issues are big. Sometimes it's really great to have somebody to hang out with.
Yeah, so let's actually take a quick listen and excerpt from that clip.
China, are you messing with the internet?
Yes.
Where are you gonna stop?
No.
Hey, Africa, do you have any properties for sale?
I could maybe sell...
You know what? I'm gonna take all of it.
China, where do you get all this oil?
Russia gave it to me!
Russia? So when do you know Russia?
We're workout buddies!
Alright, so you can borrow my movies and I can borrow your movies.
Correct.
And if any of us has a problem, we go to the WTO.
Correct.
But neither of us is going to listen to the WTO.
Correct.
China!
What's up?
Can we move this?
No.
You want it there?
I don't not want it there.
Wow, that was pretty good.
Clip.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
So that video really shows that, you know, if we can make U.S. and China laugh again, we can gain some valuable insights and understandings to help the two countries work together.
Sure.
So, Jack, why don't you take us away on just getting to know Jesse a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah, I guess before we start, and for our listeners who haven't heard your comedy before or don't know who you are, Jesse, could you tell us your story in brief? What's your China connection? And what are you trying to achieve with the U.S.-China Comedy Center that you just started?
Sure. So I'm originally from Boston, grew up in Boston in the suburb Newton, Mass., if anyone's from Boston area. And I did improv comedy all throughout high school and college. And then I also got into studying Chinese and went to study abroad in my junior year of college. While I was studying abroad and learning Chinese, I was thinking, hey, I can't do all this comedy that I'm used to doing, but there must be Chinese comedy, right? I just never thought about it. And that kind of led me on a path of discovery, first to discover the traditional Chinese form of comedy called xiangsheng, which is like crosstalk comedy, kind of like a two-man Abbott and Costello vaudeville type comedy. And then I was interested enough in that and how comedy works across cultures that I was applied for and was fortunate enough to get a Fulbright grant in 2012 to go over and research Chinese comedy. apprenticed to a Chinese master comedian there to learn that crosstalk comedy. And when the grant was over, I was just enjoying it so much, I decided to try to stay. So the last 4 years, I've been in China doing the crosstalk, doing stand-up in Chinese, doing improv in Chinese, and then recently starting my own venue, the U.S.-China Comedy Center. So if you're ever in Beijing in the Gulo area, we got shows every Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Cool, yeah.
So as you were learning under traditional Chinese Xiangsheng masters, what are some elements that are unique to Chinese comedy, and what are some universal elements that you can relate to as an American?
Sure. So some of the stuff that's unique, particularly about Xiangsheng, the crosstalk, is that you have these what they call traditional pieces. And there are traditional pieces that everybody should know and everybody should learn. And then the creativity comes in how you perform the piece rather than the specific content of the piece. So stand-up is always very hungry. You want everything to be original and everything to be created right now. People will go back and watch old routines, but there's no sense of like, oh, in order to be a real stand-up, you need to learn George Carlin's old routine, you know, and 10 things you can't say on the radio, you know, like... That's part of the Xiangsheng tradition that's actually quite interesting. But there's, you know, that is not the entirety of the comedy. There's also a lot of stuff that's very current that is, you know, based off of what's in the news yesterday. And, you know, to that degree, you know, people everywhere around the world laugh at what's important to them. So if you go into any comedy club anywhere, comedians are taking guesses on like, I think people will be into this. I think people are interested in this. Trying to hit hot topics and trying to hit issues that mean things to people. So if an issue is relevant in a lot of places, you know, we're young people trying to make our way in the world, and it's hard to afford living in a nice place, and it's hard to afford a car, and it's hard to, you know, buy a home. You know, these sort of issues are relevant in both the U.S. and in China. And then there will be, of course, some issues that are more relevant in one place than another, but everyone's trying to get through life, so.
Yeah, picking up on that thread, could you tell us a little bit about sort of what the Chinese comedy scene is like, what is trending,
sure.
How is it adapting to the digital age? Are forms like Xiangsheng still popular among young people?
Sure, so there's definitely still Xiangsheng. I mean, I think Xiangsheng is growing, although it's like compared to things in China where like, for instance, like 4 years ago, there was no stand-up, and now 4 years later, every TV station is trying to put stand-up on the air. Compared to that sort of growth, Xiangsheng doesn't appear to be growing as fast. But there are live Xiangsheng chains all throughout, especially northern China. But most major cities will have at least one or two live places where you can go see Xiangsheng. The scene in the Chinese comedy scene is an interesting thing, because in America you have tons of comedy clubs that feed into having a smaller number of professional performers. In China, they have had professional performers for a long time, like the Xiangsheng performers, like sketch performers, TV hosts. And then when stand-up started to get noticed, these people who have never done stand-up before were just kind of assigned to do stand-up shows by the TV stations. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of people who are on the biggest platforms who do in China what's called 脱口秀 or talk show. Anything that involves talking and is a show is now called talk show. So that includes stand-up, that includes podcasting, that includes video blogging, that includes like leaving 60-second WeChat messages on a public account every day. It's all talk show, because that's vaguely Western and interesting. And talk show comes along with a little bit of baggage of like, or, you know, good baggage or bad baggage of you should have your own opinion, you should be trying to make stuff uniquely, you should be trying to share your opinions about the world, which are not exactly traditionally Chinese, you know, thoughts about like, you know, grab the mic and tell those 300 people what you think, you know. So that's part of the comedy scene, but there also is an underground scene which is much more familiar to what we would see in America, where there are stand-up comedians who know what stand-up is as distinct from talk show, where there are, you know, comedy venues. You know, my venue in Beijing, there's a place called Kung Fu Comedy in Shanghai that's a pretty legit underground stand-up place. And then also an improv comedy scene that, you know, is actually growing as well. In 2012, when I first got there, there were probably 5 or 6 improv troupes in the country, and now I'd say there might be close to 20. So it's growing and it's becoming a real thing. And that scene, you know, normally in America to feed so many TV stations that all want comedy and internet stations that all want comedy. And, you know, you would have a lot more like venues and like more grassroots stuff and more comedy infrastructure. But in China, it's kind of the opposite, where you have a lot of people saying they do comedy and very few people that have like had experience writing and doing comedy in a, for long term. So,
yeah. So you mentioned different clubs in Beijing and Shanghai. Are there major regional differences in the, in sort of what people like in terms of comedy? Are there sort of age segments?
Sure. Well, I mean, in China specifically, because there's so many dialects, like if you go to a local place and try to see a local comedy show, it's likely you'll hit at some sort of dialect. The good and the bad about dialect is that dialects tend to just be funnier than Mandarin, because if you think about Mandarin, Mandarin is kind of a language that was invented for use as a common speech. When you do that and you associate standard Mandarin with everything you've ever learned in school plus the news in China, these are not funny things. This is how the politicians are supposed to speak. It's how the news performers are supposed to speak. Yeah. Even in a joke in Chinese, you often will slip into dialect for comic effect. So it'd be like, you know, 我昨天打了一个车，然后这个司机说你要去哪儿了？ You know, like I went in a cab, and the cab driver said, "Hey, what you doing, man?" You know, that same sort of thing.
It's
works
not even
in
a
English
dialect.
Well.
That's just an accent.
It's just an accent, or like, you know, if you had a piece where you went to Dongbei or whatever, and the person from Northeast China, they open the door and they have their dialect, like that creates the comedy. It's actually not the Mandarin that's creating the comedy.
Interesting.
The downside of this, of course, is just market. Like the news media, like the media system in China is mostly in Mandarin, and the huge amazing part of this huge market for, you know, 1.3 billion people that want to laugh, if you're not doing your jokes in Mandarin, your market is somewhat smaller. So, and comedy is so language focused that it's not like music, or, you know, people might like songs in Guangdonghua or like in Cantonese, even if they don't speak Cantonese, but they're not going to like Cantonese comedy if they don't speak Cantonese. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So on this point of language, right? So American media is so popular in China, right? Whether it be in music with Lady Gaga or Hollywood, where you have Matt Damon star in a movie about the Great Wall.
Yeah.
I think because of the demands of the Chinese producers who wanted him.
There are a lot
of
people that want to figure out a way to make that work.
Didn't cast you. They chose Matt.
No,
Damon.
Matt Damon bumped me for a speech. Oh, did I tell you about this?
No.
I was invited to speak to then Secretary of State John Kerry at the Council on the People-to-People Relations, like in D.C. And I was invited, and then I showed up, and I thought I was going to make a speech, and then it turns out they're like, "Oh, we got a video from Matt Damon and Zhang Yimou, and they're gonna air that instead." And I'm like, "Oh no!" So Matt Damon bumped me. Matt Damon's stealing my gigs, but I don't know exactly how that will end up turning out. But
so my point there was that, you know, so yesterday in your skit, you did a bit about adapting Mitch Hedberg into Chinese, right?
Yeah.
And I was wondering if, you know, any other American comedians translate well, I guess, for Chinese audiences?
Are I don't know. I
popularity
mean,
popularity for American comedy online?
There is a group of, like, the underground stand-up scene obviously loves a lot of different comedians. Russell Peters has a weirdly big following in China.
good for accent, stand-ups.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of jokes about Chinese people as well,
right.
So that's kind of cool. But, like, the biggest things that really make it to most people are things like The Big Bang Theory is an incredibly popular show there.
Oh, okay.
Even recently, like, BoJack Horseman has, like, a million Weibo followers. Like, you know, these shows that you wouldn't think of as necessarily succeeding is, like, you hit the sort of niche. You know, BoJack Horseman in particular, it's, like, kind of deep and soul-searching, and it's not normally what you see in a cartoon. And, like, in a million years, no Chinese cartoon is going to think to make BoJack Horseman. even comedically, like, the way... I like BoJack Horseman, so I won't go too far in that. Anyway, but those sort of things are successful. One thing that I think is oftentimes underrepresented, though, when Americans talk about American influence in Chinese comedy is Korean influence. Like, half of the TV shows are Korean IP. Most of the variety shows where the big comedians are, where you would call like 喜剧明星, like comedy stars, are in Korean formats doing sketch or doing like reality show type things.
Oh, wow.
That's what's kind of really popular on TV. Film, it appears that American film is kind of more popular in general, and sort of what they would call 网络剧, like web series, it appears that the Americans are doing pretty well as well. But for like television, it really has been for the last 3 or 4 years that most of what's succeeding on the actual physical TV is Korean stuff.
Yeah.
And that has a different style of comedy as well. Even a couple of years ago, like Japanese style, like for lack of a better term, like live action anime was really big. There was a big web series called Wanwan Mei Xiang Dao, where it was like really fast editing, really high pace, like, you know, somebody walking in around, sort of like, you know, these sort of like it basically looks like live action anime with a lot of sound effects and stuff like that. And that was really popular. So American comedy has a role to play in this sort of thing, but it's not necessarily that like, oh, the more authentic you can make the American comedy, the better it's going to do in Asia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting point. It's like a lot of my job in terms of what I try to do at the Comedy Center is like, what elements of the American comedy are really the things that make it so good for live and the reason why people all around the world watch American comedy, and what elements are just factors of the fact that it's happening here, you know, and it's and like people in China could enjoy that and they don't need to worry about getting the 100% exact same thing the Americans are getting.
So one of the hallmarks of American comedy in my mind is political satire.
Yeah.
And I know how sensitive that could be in China.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, when you perform stand-up shows, when you publish videos online, what have you learned about navigating censorship and what works and what doesn't work?
Sure. So, well, the first thing to know is that 99.9% of Chinese censorship is self-censorship. So it's the idea that you don't, like, nobody ever pitches a joke to a show that they know is going to get censored. Because it loses face for you, it causes trouble for everybody else. You probably just like won't get a call back. It's just like, why do it? You won't win on like big platforms trying to get like slip stuff through. It just doesn't happen. Furthermore, you probably don't even want it to happen. Slip anything through, it doesn't do good things for you. But the idea that like, you know, people are scared in a small club with 100 people in it that's not being filled to like say political jokes is also just not true. Like in a small venue where people aren't being filmed, where it's not major brands associated with it and it's not airing over state media, people say whatever they want. There's a little bit of a chicken and an egg problem where like the audience in China for, and this is actually not just Communist Party, but even going back before the Communist Party, just a culture that doesn't like dealing with sensitive issues in public places. You know, the audience is not comfortable hearing political jokes the same way we in America would like to do political jokes. So as I was saying last night in the show, like in America, you say like this politician had that policy that they're going to spend $25 billion, exact number, on building this thing that doesn't exist. You know, who knows what I'm talking about? But you say the people, you say the places, you say the names, you can say all that. In China, even if you could say that, the audience probably wouldn't like it as much because it doesn't have as much subtlety to it. Some people will just get uncomfortable. And this is also something, it's not actually just China. If you look back in the Soviet Union as well to like Soviet comedy, like any communist comedy, or and this actually applies even to America, to elements that are sensitive, whether it's politics or whatever, any sensitive joke, the fact that you said the sensitive topic becomes all that anybody's listening to. So if you say like, you know, if I as a white comedian in America go on stage in LA and say like, let me tell you what I think about black people. Everyone's like, oh, what's coming here? No one's listening for the joke. Everybody's now is like, whoa, what is he doing?
Right. You know,
so it's a similar thing. And that's because you've touched a sensitive point. If you really had something to say politically in China, you wouldn't go for it that way because then no one's going to listen to the content. So if you were trying to do it some way like that, you'd go about it from the side or go about it from, you know, underneath or some other way. And then the audience likes to listen to it. So the audience is happy to support that if you do it in a way that they doesn't make them uncomfortable.
Okay, I got to ask you about Donald Trump. Topic of some sensitivity for a lot of Americans.
Yeah. More sensitive in America than it is in China.
Yeah. But one thing that President Trump has succeeded in doing very well so far is make SNL, Saturday Night Live, great again, right?
Yeah.
The clips have been, the political satire on SNL has been on point of late. And there's, you know, looking on social media, a wave of really great sort of political satire around the world kind of poking fun at Donald Trump. Is there some of that happening in China or some of the comedian who's performed in your venue talking about Trump in any way, making fun of him?
It's really hard to make Trump relevant in China because the truth is that most of the things that people are really upset about here are domestic issues right now or foreign issues that are pertaining to the United States. Even like every now and then there will be an article that's like China loves watching The Daily Show, and they'll show a clip about China watching The Daily Show. It's not that China watches The Daily Show. China watches The Daily Show when they talk about China. So it's, you know, they're interested in knowing what foreigners think about China and are saying to themselves, not thinking about Chinese people being present. That hasn't really happened so far with Trump so much. The few sort of like flashpoints that have come with like, you know, Asia policy, compared to the other wacko stuff that's going on with Trump, there hasn't been as much of it. You see lots of stuff on, or at least I see on my WeChat feed, a lot of people, you know, cartoons making fun of Trump or talking about what's going on in the U.S., but it's very rarely in the sort of relevant way that it's easy to make comedy about. And here in America, it's a, like, you know, whether you support Trump, whether you don't support Trump, it's affecting your daily life. In China, there's also the interesting element that in China, people don't generally have a lot of trust in politicians. So in an election between a businessman and a politician in China, people would, if they were voting, they would choose the businessman, you know? So there is this idea that, you know, Hillary in China and here was kind of painted as a, you know, lifetime politician. Trump is an outsider. That looks pretty good as well to the Chinese state of mind. I want to do an experiment because this is something I've been asking people. If tomorrow China was a full democracy and you were not allowed to vote for any Chinese politician as president, who do you think Chinese people would elect as the president of China? Take just a little moment to think about it, and then we'll say it one at a time.
But sure, I got my answer. Yeah,
it is. Do you think you have your
Jack
person?
Ma, baby?
Yeah, my
Jack
name.
Ma.
Yeah.
Jack Ma. Right. Everybody. So the idea, and to a lot of people, like you know, Donald Trump is kind of a similar sort of figure to Jack Ma, whereas you know, big business empire, depending on how you read your news, self-made person, you know, the you know, this sort of thing. Now, a lot of the issues that we have with Trump are also issues that are not relevant in China. Like, you know, people are upset about conflict of interest. Whereas in China, it's taken as a fact of life. The government is going to make lots of money personally off of being government officials. That's why you want to work for the government. That's like, you know, so the that's like, again, this is like everyday people who are coming into the comedy club. So it's hard to get people upset about Trump's conflict of interest. When, of course, that's the thing. In fact, if I were to do jokes on that, the joke would be like, oh, these poor Americans, like they didn't think this is what happens. Yeah.
Relevant Oregon on Twitter is doing a great job.
Yeah, so,
on
but then I would also like to say, and this is a little thing that I'm trying to figure out right now about the comedy club, and when you talk about satire, is the entirety of the satirical and comedic, like, you know, sensibilities of America seem to pile on Trump, and it didn't apparently matter. Because the nature of satire is the people who think it's funny are already people on your side. So I think the worry that I have about comedy going forward in the new, you know, in this new, the new administration is that it's going to be so easy to satire Trump. But really all of the things that we're satiring Trump for are going to be, you know, shades of stuff that he's already been satired for. You know, and so
that's a bad thing. Cause I mean, it'll make the Colbert report really great again, maybe. I think it's
cathartic, but it's not effective if your goal is like, you know, if the point of satire would be, let's show the ludicrousness of this situation in the hopes of getting people to change their mind and support and make a better world. It may do that to people who already, you know, are opposing Trump. But I don't think it has any real impact on people outside of that sphere. And so what I'm worried about is the comedic energy being used in that space as opposed to finding ways of, say, like, you know, why don't we make fun of greed? Like, let's make fun of greedy people. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican or, you know, they're Chinese or American or like... Let's make fun of greedy people trying to own the whole world themselves. Like, let's not try to make it about this party or that party, you know, or even necessarily about this person. If you're gonna satirize something, let's satirize kind of the things that really the world should have less of.
Yeah.
You know? Actually, on the greedy people, mm-hmm. one of your video hits is More Money, More Fun.
Yeah, More Money, More Fun.
Which is a parody of one of my favorite songs, More Money, More Problems. And it goes through a really brief history of Chinese economic policy. So I was wondering if you could kind of go into that a little bit about maybe switching gears to kind of give us a little taste of how you've done that video and how you have used that to show different generations of comedy in China as well. Could kind of describe to us how has Chinese comedy evolved over the centuries.
Sure. So Mo Money Mo Fajian was a parody again of Mo Money Mo Problems that I made. If you guys haven't seen it, you can search it up. I think if you Google Mo Money Mo Fajian, it's the first thing that comes up. I hope.
Yeah.
The video was a lot of fun to make. It was basically this idea that, you know, trying to make a rap song about Fajian development in China and what that means. And it's meant different things through different times. And to some degree, I really like this development of China as a way of trying to get across to people that haven't been to China just why things are the way they are right now in China. Like, look at the change that's happened from, you know, not that long ago. Whether you want to say the beginning of the reform era, or even if you want to say like from the beginning of the republic to now, is not a long time. And the massive change that's happened within this country and how that affects everyday life for everyday people. So a lot of, especially the third verse of Mo Money Mo Fajian is just about like the way that life is now, you know. 以前是平房, now we got 楼大厦, 百货商店, they take up the whole block, 告诉公路,告诉服务, 明白胡同文化不断在继续, you know. It's, of course, look the video, it has subtitles, because it's, what I did discover with this song is that if you wanted to actually make bilingual rap intelligible, don't do what I did in Mo Money Mo Fajian, is split up sentences and stuff like that, because it makes it really difficult to do. You can do two lines in English and two lines in Chinese, and it actually sounds a lot more understandable than the mixing, although the mixing was a lot of fun. But you know, when I come back to the States and in the show that we did last night that you guys saw and that we may have some clips or something up from in the future, that type of show is designed to try to just get across to people what life is like for regular people in China, or at least in Beijing, and explain the background behind a lot of all this stuff so that when you say stuff like, for instance, people are like, oh, it's the Communist Party in China. Aren't people upset about living in the Communist Party's regime? And I'm like, everyone's like trying to figure out how to get their phone fixed. And like, you know, they want to find a way to like eat nice food that isn't polluted. And like, you know, what do I do for fun after I've bought like, you know, a rice cooker? So I don't have anything else to buy that's going to make me fun. That's going to be fun. Where do I go for fun? Come see a comedy show. Like, this is what people are thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, and except for periods of extreme social and political turmoil, you know, people are, you know, just like people here, is like, even politically active people are spending 95 to 100% of their energy on their life and their friends and their, you know, family. So
yeah, that being said, I mean, we read a lot of, you know, Western media now on this campaign against Western values in China been made very very much of, and Professor Shirk here has written about this topic of late, right? Seems to be sort of the repression of NGOs and media and colleges seems to be a very worrying trend that a lot of previously people who are maybe you can call friends of China are growing concerned about, right? And this idea of like stand up, it's a, some may call it a Western import. How, you know, has that made, and I remember,
I mean, I do joke about this of like, you know, why, like, for instance, I do stand up, but I also do shangshang, I also do improv, and one of the reasons, besides just the fact that I enjoy doing all of them and I can't really give them up because I've tried and I will come back, but one of the reasons I say is like, you know, I don't know when stand up could just be deemed Western values, it's banned, you know, that could happen. It's not a 0% chance. It's not a high percent chance, but it's also non-zero. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, in America, it's inconceivable. You say, like, oh, you know, like, Kung Fu is Chinese culture that's banned. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, really, like, whether it's the NGOs, whether it's the art, whether it's any of that stuff, whether it's academia, the real thing that I think is being said here is that China believes it has the right to control how its country develops. If you're an outside group and your goal is specifically to make social change, And you are not tied to the government or not beholden to the government or not communicating with the government, China doesn't want you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that, and that's like, you know, and at the end of the day, the government has a lot of ways to make things very difficult for people that, you know, the government doesn't want to be there.
True.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that Western culture is under attack in China. What it means is China wants the ability to control institutions that are trying to affect society, and the easiest box to put them in are generally Western culture. Because again, what is Western culture? What are you banning? Like, you know, if I do stand up and I like is swearing Western culture, because I can show you Chinese comedy routines from the Ming Dynasty where people are swearing. Like, that's not Western culture.
Right.
Is it doing it on TV that's Western? Of course, TV was invented in the West. You know, what's going to happen?
Yep.
Like, it's not, it doesn't really hold up to, like, an intellectual thought of, like, Western culture. But what it does mean is if your institution doesn't have, you know, teeth in the game, it's like, you know, we believe China should be different because we think it would be better that way, but we're not interacting with China in order to make China different. Those sort of groups, I don't think, are going to have a lot of leeway in China to do stuff. Now, that being said, the end of the day, if you're not really, like, the Chinese government, for whatever people will say, is genuinely concerned about China being a better place. Like, you know, these rules are not made 100% just to thumb their nose at the West. It's like they think this is the best way to make a good country for Chinese people. And so at the end of the day, if you, like, you know, if I do Western comedy, but I can show that, hey, like, look, people are having fun. This is giving Chinese people an ability to blow off steam and to be able to be creative. It's giving Chinese people a chance to have a fun date night and go out. It's giving Chinese people a way to express themselves that I'm not telling them what to say in their stand-up. Improv is improvised. If Chinese people say things you don't like in an improv show, that has nothing to do with America writ large. Comedy is a platform and a way for people to talk about themselves in the world. And if the world is troubled, the comedy might be troubled as well, but that's not Western values. And I think at that point, if the world is so troubled, the comedy is really, really bad, that there are probably bigger fish to fry for the Chinese government. So, yeah.
You have more questions?
Yeah, I think we're running out of time here. I guess the last things I'll say is, one, you know, we'll have, you know, it's been a pleasure having Jesse here at UCSD at the end of your great LOL of China tour. We'll have the video of your show online next week on China Focus blog. It's chinafocus.us. And the last question we have for you is, you know, for our audience members who want to get into Chinese comedy and the Chinese comedy scene, how would you suggest that they start, and where should they go in Beijing?
Sure. So if you're physically in Beijing, come to the U.S. China Comedy Center. We're near Gulo. We have, you can search a public account, I think, is U.S. China Comedy, U.S. China Comedy at, on like WeChat. You can find us. We do shows on Fridays and Saturdays, and also there's free improv workshops every Wednesday. If you're in Shanghai, as I said, Kung Fu Comedy is a great place. I've done shows there before, and it's a really legit underground, both English and Chinese comedy as well. And if you're interested in looking for Xiangsheng, there's a couple good places you can go. All around the country in China, you can go to the Guodegang Xiangsheng chain, the Deyun She. There's also a couple places near Gulo, not far from my place. There's a place called the Xiha Baofupu and the Gulo Xijuchang. These places all have Xiangsheng. Just search it up. It's not as hard to find as you might think. It's just a matter of trying to go out there and find it. And then once you find it, hopefully you'll be back.
Thanks so much.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming to our campus for the show. Thanks for coming to this podcast or talk show.
Yeah.
And thanks for making US and China laugh again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So thank you for listening to China 21, the podcast of the 21st Century China Center at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy. Visit china.ucsd.edu and connect with us on social media. 新年快乐. The more fire down we see.